In this episode, you'll learn why your children's tantrums after divorce might actually be a hidden cry for professional help, and how ignoring them could make things much worse.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week, we had Dr. Erica Miller on the show, and we had a great conversation about how divorce impacts children emotionally and behaviorally, what evidence-based support and treatment options look like, and when to seek professional help for learning or mental health concerns. I hope this episode is valuable to anyone who might be listening. Stay tuned for the full episode. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, Dr. Erica Miller is joining us. Dr. Erica Miller, director of Connected Minds NYC, is a licensed clinical psychologist who specializes in neuropsychological assessment and evidence-based treatments. She is passionate about practical and research-based recommendations to support children and families, both at home and in school. Today, Dr. Miller and I will be discussing how divorce impacts children emotionally and behaviorally, what evidence-based support and treatment options look like, and when to seek professional help for learning or mental health concerns. Welcome, Dr. Miller.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we are so happy to have you. This is going to be great. I love talking to mental health experts and particularly, you know, really talking about children, because I think that there is just so much out there that we all can learn from. And, you know, everybody's kids are different. And there's not like a one.
For sure.
Right? Not like a one size fits all that are going to work.
No. And I actually think that's like a really important piece that I think so many women probably going through divorce to get to this point had to at somewhere trust themselves that what they're doing is like the right thing to do. Right. And so, but there can be a lot of mistrust, I think, that women, moms have, am I doing the right thing or not? So your point about like, I really believe parents kind of know, I think, to an extent intuitively, what works or doesn't work for my kid. And so I think listening to that voice can be really helpful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a big thing, right? Yeah, just trusting yourself through this process. But Dr. Miller, for our listeners, would you share a little about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. So I'm a pediatric psychologist, and I did my doctorate degree at Teachers College in school psychology. And then I did a clinical internship at St. Luke's Hospital in New York City, which is now Mount Sinai. And then I did a 2-year postdoc at a private practice in Brooklyn, specializing in neuropsych assessment. And from there, I've worked at like a special education private school and then started to develop my own practice. And that's kind of where I am today. So I've worked with, you know, kids in schools, private practices, clinics, hospital settings. And so I've really seen like a range of kids and families in a variety of settings with different needs.
Well, and that is so fascinating. I can't wait to really get into this today. And so let's start with neuropsychological exam. Like, what is that? And who?
Yeah, that's like a really big question, right? Like, what is that? When do I need them? What are they? And so a neuropsych assessment is a little bit different than a psychological assessment or a psychoed that a lot of the schools provide, which is really a much kind of smaller product. It looks like an IQ test and some academics. And sometimes there might be like a social emotional rating scale that maybe a parent will complete or a teacher will complete. A neuropsych assessment really takes us a couple of steps. So we're going to dive in a little bit deeper into understanding what are your kids' strengths and weaknesses in various domains. And we're really talking about children here, but neuropsych assessments can be used for young adults and adults as well. Increasingly, I'm seeing a lot of adults actually coming into my practice and having questions about themselves. So you can take this information for your child or for yourself. And so typically we always start with like a comprehensive intake interview where we're really trying to get at history, developmental, psychosocial, learning, academic, social relationships, sensory sensitivities, mood, anxiety, those kinds of things. And then we also will do an IQ test, and then we'll do more attention or executive functioning, pragmatic language, or more expressive receptive language skills. We'll look at memory and learning, fine motor skills, visual spatial, problem solving. And then depending on the referral, there might be more academics that might take place and a deeper delve into a child's social, emotional, or systems functioning. So how are they operating in school, homes, etc.
Now, when, you know, this is something that you need to do, well, I guess that's how do we know? How do you know, like, oh, I need to get one of these for my child?
That's like a really great question. I wish I always had this like crystal ball. Like so many parents come to me and say, should I get one? And I think there's a few things I think about in terms of when, and then we can talk a little bit about the financial side that I think is can be really important. Mm-hmm. But if your child, I guess, is really struggling in school or at home, and you feel like you've tried a number of things, that to me is often a time to let's really understand what's happening here, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe we are missing something. Is there a skill that my child doesn't have that I'm assuming that they do have, or I think they have? Maybe they have a language weakness. Maybe they have a really small working memory. So when I give them a lot of instructions, they only remember one piece, and then I'm getting mm-hmm. angry at them and they're feeling frustrated because they're not able to get in the information. Maybe there's like a phonological deficit. So their reading's being impacted, right? So we don't always know, I think, sometimes why a child is struggling, whether it's learning, friendships, academics, and this can help us really understand why and then what to do kind of next from there. So it can help target what treatment is going to be most helpful or effective.
So essentially, you know, you're, as a parent, you're like, I know my child's struggling, whether it's in school or socially or at home. Yeah. That's probably what presents. And then so they do seek out, okay, well, maybe we need some therapy, right? Like, let's try to figure out how we can best serve.
Right. So sometimes I'll see kids after they've tried therapy and they're like, so we've done therapy for a couple months and it hasn't really been working or we're not noticing any changes, right? And so the question is why? Or sometimes families come first and say, we really want to make sure that the therapy that we're going to use or the kind of person that we're going to work with is tailored to really understand my child's needs. And so it can be that way as well, especially from the learning aspect. Sometimes it comes from the school. So,
and with that, like, yeah. And then I guess that would be great as far as like, then, you know, what are the different types of therapy? Because you offer lots of different types of therapy.
So there is such a big range of therapies that are really available. And I think the therapy really, to me, depends on what is the clinical presentation. You know, are we working with parents? So in my practice, I tend to work a lot with parents. I'm really thinking about,
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Okay. So you're thinking about parents. Okay.
Yeah. So I really think a lot about parents. And so, or that's exactly the work that I'm doing right now. And so most of the work I focus on is helping parents support their kids.
Got it. Okay.
And there's the various, you know, I mentioned there's like parent management training is like one kind of evidence-based treatment. There's collaborative and proactive solutions, but there's, I like listed a few, but there are so many different kinds. And I think what's most helpful is to get a professional that's familiar with a few different types of evidence-based strategies, but also will personalize things to you and your family. You know, like I see a lot of families right now that say, you know what, timeout and punishment, not for me. And so, okay, like if that's not for you, we might talk about why it's worked, why it doesn't work, you know, but who's really responsive to you as the parents in terms of what's working, what's not working, and who will then kind of call with the skills that they think are most helpful and personalize it to your kind of family and needs and values. Like, what are your values as a family?
Now, when in the introduction, we talked about that you use evidence-based therapy and science-backed interventions. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Yeah. So basically that means that I'm really looking at pulling treatments that have research behind them, showing some kind of symptom reduction. These are tools that have been validated, that have outcomes that have been tracked. So, you know, yes, it's what I also experience working with the families that I work with. Lots of clinicians you'll hear will say, oh, I like this one, or I like this one a little bit better, might match with our own style. But I'm really not just kind of saying, oh, this is what I think works, but really what I'm going to the research and saying, this is what has been empirically validated. So a non-evidence-based treatment would really be, doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad per se. It just means that they don't have research yet. And so, like, you know, I think science is all the time coming out with new things, and it doesn't mean don't do it or it won't be helpful. There's, you know, so many families doing different kinds of new treatments out there who want to try something. And I think that that's great and they should be allowed to try that. Sometimes I get nervous when I see these programs that kind of promise the world out there. They're often like very expensive and time consuming and don't have research behind them, mm-hmm. or the research done is only in-house and there's not like another, you know, peer reviewed study or like another like blind study done by somebody else. And so sometimes that makes me a little bit nervous to endorse that in a record. Like, so when after I do a neuropsych assessment, I always give recommendations. And so for me, I have a hard time recommending something that I don't know is empirically validated, that there's no research behind that. but I understand parents who would want to do anything to support their kids. Like, wouldn't we all? And so I just want them to really understand, though, what they're maybe getting themselves into and to have reasonable expectations.
I think that's so helpful because it's really hard, right? You know, we as parents love our children, are trying to do the very best thing. And sometimes I'm sure there can be, like you said, the promise of something, you're just so hopeful that you're willing to even put the money down, and it may not be research-based, and maybe that's not the first place to start, right? You should maybe start at some tried and true, some things that, based on the research, ought to work.
That are known to work. And I also think for families thinking about, what are the goals? Are my goals realistic for my kids? So, you know, I have a first grader who was having a little bit of like a reading problem at the start of this year, and I had to have reasonable expectations. She can't go from not reading to reading a chapter book in 6 weeks necessarily. Like, that would be too big of an expectation. Or a child who's very, very anxious, you know, they might not go from sleeping in their parents' bed every night because of their anxiety to then saying, you know what, yes, I'm going to go on sleepovers all the time, right? We have to have, I think, reasonable expectations as parents and be thinking about, where's my child starting from? Not necessarily where I want them to be, right? Like, what is appropriate for my kid? This goes back to like knowing your kid.
Right. Now, let's talk about, parenting support, because you offer parenting support. Yeah. And what is that? And how does that tie into divorce?
So to me, I think like divorce can be a really big change that families are kind of going through. You know, I'm sure you've worked with a lot of families who maybe have tried couples counseling in the past, right? They're really like parenting support. I think the way it ties to divorce most is that we're trying to figure out, how do we help parents be on the same team here to support their kids through these changes? And not just the changes, but also just to support their kids' development generally as well, right? Like, their parents at the end of the day trying to do the best that they can for their kids. And so this is, and I think oftentimes this comes up with divorced parents, non-divorced parents. Parents don't always agree. They don't always have the same approaches. They don't always have the same styles. They don't always come, right? I think the way in which we were parented can often affect the way we parent, right? Our values. And so there's parenting support around helping parents make, you know, thinking through, what are the decisions I'm making? How am I coming to these decisions? How can we parent in alignment? I think this is especially true if you have like a neurodiverse kid or a child that is more anxious, that you're really thinking about, well, my kid needs consistency probably, right? And how do we sort of parent as much as we can with similar values and styles? Two people are obviously going to be different, right? It's never going to be the same. But like, are we in agreement with what we're doing for our child?
Which, you know, that I think even in a healthy, intact marriage can be a challenge.
It's so hard. Yes, no, I think the parenting sessions are some of my hardest sessions and often end up feeling like couples counseling a little bit, right? Like no matter what, because they have to work together for this joint child and of course have different ideas and come at problems and challenges in different ways.
And I mean, just I can speak from personal experience, just like that was something that never occurred to me. You know, probably should have. I mean, I wasn't a divorce attorney when I got married, and not even really when we first started having children. But like, I never thought about, I'm going to have to like get his agreement, because I'm like, that seems odd to me, right? Like, I think we're going to just do it my way.
Right. And that like, that doesn't always happen that way, right? Or like, oh my gosh, when I'm not around, you know, my ex-partner is doing these things that don't espouse my values, or that I don't want my kids seeing, or, you know, that aren't towards our goals of developing our kids' coping skills or their reading skills or their executive functioning or whatever it is.
Yeah. And so, and I know then in a lot of times that leads to problems in the marriage, the breakup of the marriage, and then it's just going to always be a challenge. So these children really have, you know, a long road of coping with like just maybe very different parenting styles.
Right. And that's really tricky for a kid to figure out, right? Like, and especially with some of the kids that I'm seeing that are coming to me for a neuropsych assessment, sometimes they already do have some learning differences or, you know, anxiety, executive functioning. So their ability to adapt and adjust might be a little bit slower. It takes them a little bit longer. And then you add in two separate homes, two separate systems, two separate structures, right? Can take them a little bit more time to really adjust. Now we know rules and expectations are always different in different places, right? Home, school, different. Office, home, out with friends, you know, I even think about different kinds of restaurants have different rules to them, right? We want kids to be able to code switch and learn the difference. Mm-hmm. But sometimes as you're developing skills for kids, they need the consistency to make that stick.
Right, right. Your clinicians are trained in behavioral parenting practices.
Yes.
Such as the parent management training and collaborative problem solving. Can you help us understand how and explain how those work?
Totally. So they're both parenting approaches, and there's some similarities between these two programs, and there's also a whole bunch of other ones that exist out there. But parent management training is really a parenting program to help parents work with kids who have more challenging behaviors, and so it works on strengthening like the parent-child relationship, positive reinforcement, setting clear and consistent expectations, problem solving. For some families, it can also include like a timeout component. Many families, as I mentioned, don't like that, so we don't include that as much. Whereas collaborative problem solving, also based on how do we reduce challenging behaviors. And here it's about how do I teach kids the skills that they lack. So the premise is that kids do well when they can. And if they're behaving poorly, it means that they don't have some kind of skill, otherwise they would want to do better. And so it's our job as parents to help understand and identify which are these skills that they're missing and teach them the missing skills. And that we'll tend to see from there an improvement in behavior overall. But certainly there's a lot of like overlap, you know, in all of these approaches, and that I think they all really value and strengthen parent-child relationships and helping parents really be more consistent and view their kids from a more positive lens. So not that my kid is being willful or defiant, right? Or they're doing this to me, right? They're just making my life so difficult. It would just be so much easier if they stop. But really thinking about what is like the story behind my kid's behavior, right? What is happening for my child here? Something not okay on the inside, must be feeling some kind of way to be behaving that way. Let me understand that and help them. Mm-hmm. The way in which we frame our kids' behavior can change a lot about the way in which we then, I think, approach them and respond to them.
And I think that's so important because it's so hard, right? And I think, and like you said, you know, your parent, I'm messing up my words, but like as a parent, right? You know, you learn from your parents because that's how we all learn, right? Even if you take courses, I mean, but if you're not a trained, you know, mental health professional who has learned these things, you're going from maybe your gut, but a lot of that is based on your upbringing. And you really, I mean, I believe that all parents are doing the best that they can at the time with what they have, and not, we don't all have the same tools, resources.
Yep.
And so it can be really challenging, though, because the behaviors can be difficult.
They can be really difficult. And I think oftentimes I hear from parents, but I never was this way. So when you have a kid that's really different from you, I don't know if that like resonates with you, but you know, like I have a kid that's different from me, or I, you know, and my parents were really different from me also. Or we get the opposite. Parents who are parenting completely opposite to the way that which they parented too, right? And want to be a totally different parent. And then sometimes the pendulum can swing a little bit too far the other direction, right? Like a lot of the research shows being too strict isn't great, but also having no rules isn't the way to be either, and no boundaries, right? That kind of overly permissive style. And so really helping parents, I think, find themselves in this like new role. Like being a parent, I think a lot of us think, oh, we're gonna figure it out. Like so many women really want this for themselves, right? They really want to be a mom and have an image of what it's going to be like in their mind. And that is not always what shakes out. You know, and we have kids who have their own thoughts and feelings and desires. And so oftentimes those are really actually inconvenient to us. And that's like really the truth. They're really hard, our kids. Yeah. And so how do we balance all that? Because we actually want our kids to also have their own thoughts, feelings, and desires. Right? We want them to be critical thinkers and think for themselves and want things for themselves, because that's what we want as adults, right? To say, oh, this doesn't work for me. But as a kid, we actually often value like compliance and cooperation. So it's really, you know, how do you kind of parent the kid that you want to have, the adult that you want to ultimately raise, is what I'm often thinking about.
And yes, I didn't say it quite that articulately, but like when we were raising our children, very strong-willed, very independent, and amazing skills. They can argue with me about whether the sun is out or not, and very effectively.
Yep.
And I used to always think, all right, this is going to serve them well in the world. If I can just make it through
yes.
these, till we can launch them, because, you know, you don't want to squash them. But sometimes you're like, sometimes you just have to say, because I said so, and just that's enough.
No, 100%. Enough. For sure. And so much of parenting, I think what you're bringing up here is so important. It's really about our own parental regulation, right? So I think those are the two skills that I'm trying to often do is help first, help parents learn, how do I regulate myself in these tough moments? Because if I'm not regulated myself, I can't help my kid regulate and get through this moment. And, you know, I don't want to speak for you, but I know for myself, you said like, oh, I'm a clinician. And so I must know. Yes, I know in these moments, but it doesn't mean that I'm always regulated all the time, right? And so in my own parenting, there's times where I'm like, dude, I got so distressed here that actually I made the situation worse. My dysregulation further escalated it. And hopefully, Heather, you're like nodding and like that you've seen this.
I agree. Yeah, no, I know. Well, and then you have to step back. You have to recognize I am the adult. I need to regulate my emotions and take a breath, remove myself from the situation so that I can, you know, keep it together.
Correct. Exactly. And that is like often not an easy thing to be doing, actually. And so much of the parenting work is about that, actually, that first piece, because nothing really is going to happen if parents are not well regulated. And their kids don't feel seen and heard and validated, first step. Right.
Now, you're also trained in supportive parenting for anxious childhood emotions. So I'd want to really unpack that and I also want to ask you, do you think our kids are more anxious, or maybe society as a whole, like there's just more anxiety and, you know, for whatever many reasons than maybe, you know, prior, like
in the past. We're certainly talking about it a lot more, right? There's that new book out there, The Anxious Generation. I think we are talking about anxiety and feelings so much more. I mean, didn't talk too much about feelings in my, you know, family abortion growing up. Now there's so many more like social emotional learning curriculums. Schools have them. They're teaching kids about stress tolerance, mindfulness, emotion regulation, you know, interpersonal effectiveness. I don't think we ever really talked about these things at all as a kid, right? And so it's hard to know. Is it just more? Maybe. Are we also more aware, catching things, you know, sooner? Mm-hmm. Probably a combination of things. So space is really for kids who are anxious or have OCD. And this is also a parenting approach that can be used in conjunction with kids who are in therapy themselves. Or sometimes we see as kids who don't want to be in therapy, right? They're refusing. And so it's for parents to teach parents how to help their children reduce their kids' anxiety. And oftentimes when kids are really anxious, parents are on sort of two different sides. But one side is the accommodation side, right? So you know what? You have a hard time sleeping in your own bed. No worries. You can sleep with me every single night. Or they end up doing it, right? Saying, okay. Or there's a child that can't be alone in like a room ever. So the parent just says, fine, you can be with me wherever I am. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways we're accommodating things. We're changing our schedules. We're changing our plans, our dinner reservations, our travel, schooling to accommodate our kids' anxiety. And in the short term, I think we can often feel like we are a good parent and like doing that. I'm helping my kid and our kids' anxiety goes down kind of right away. But in the long term, we're actually not teaching our kids any skills. And so the goal here is to work with parents so they understand the accommodations that they're doing and help them accommodate less so that they're ultimately teaching their kids how to tolerate anxiety and face their fears a little bit more and start to experience kind of smaller step success.
And I know that that is hard, as you know, because no one wants to see your child in pain or in distress. Oh. But yet we also want to be able to help them cope, you know, with changes and things that are going to occur in their life. And so I do think, like, you know, there's just a lot for parents who are really paying attention. There's a lot that is you worry about, you think about.
And you think about your kids all the time. You worry about them all the time, right? And but I also want to say there's a lot of really good interventions out there and a lot of really capable clinicians. So if you're noticing this in your kids or you're concerned, I think it's definitely worth at least doing like a consult with somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, like we talked about earlier, we know what we know from, well, whether we've studied it, whether we grew up in it, but there's no shame in getting support, and it could actually help you so much more and your kids. All right. So what are the common do's and don'ts when navigating divorce with children?
I mean, this is such a big question, right? I think we could.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, I think one is you really want to be like honest with your kids about what is happening. I think a lot of parents can feel really scared to tell their kids, you know, really anxiety provoking, maybe wait to the last minute, not tell them the full story. We definitely want to be age appropriate, right? We don't have to say every detail about our kids' divorce, but we really want to tell them as much as that we know to help them feel a sense of consistency. These are some of the things that we know. We know you're going to do 1 week here and 1 week there. We know you're going to have your own rooms. We know some really kind of concrete things that help kids feel like they're in control and grounded. You also want to let them know that this was not their fault, right? There's nothing that they did wrong. It's not their fault, and that we love you, both of us, no matter what. You also might want to say that, like, they're allowed to have their experience, their emotions, and their reactions. So As a parent, I think I would let them really be angry, be sad, be worried, like really allow for that range of emotions and know that, you know, things might peak or dip down and then come back up again. Like, it is not always a linear process, especially because, listen, I'm not an expert necessarily in all the divorce myself, but my experience has been that things change in divorce over time, right? And so, like, the custody schedule might be one way, or families might think it starts off going well and then it doesn't, right? And then there's like a change. And so to know that your kid's experience is going to shift over time.
Right.
And to allow for it.
And yeah, what are some behaviors children might deploy in response to a divorce?
I think we can really see like the gamut here of things.
Yeah.
We see sometimes often a lot more anxiety, like, again, kids wanting to sleep in their parents' bed, not wanting to be away from their parents, a lot more reassurance seeking. We might get more anxiety at drop-offs, like school, or, you know, not wanting to go to different play dates or school avoidance. Sometimes we get more like outbursts of behaviors, meltdowns, tantrums, saying no to things. Older kids might see more like pickier eating, not doing their homework, sneaking, lying, those kinds of things, especially if they're feeling kind of like angry, right? You might also see them being a little bit more depressed. And in kids, depression can also look like irritability. So it doesn't always look the way it does for adults, which is just like sadness and withdrawn internal.
Yeah.
So just kind of, those are some things that I would look out for, like change in grades, change in friends, as well as some like things to be like noticing.
Yeah, you know, that's because they're gonna have some different change of behavior. Their life is, that's a massive change.
It's a massive change. And to expect, I think, something different from kids is really unfair as well, right? I sometimes think we expect more from kids than we do from adults, actually. Like, we just think you're going to be better able to go with the flow, or it doesn't impact them. And I guess one thing that would be important for parents to know is that it's okay if your child's divorce has some impact on them. Like, you know, that it doesn't mean you're not doing a good job. It doesn't mean you're not protecting your kid or you're not a good parent.
Right?
This is part of the process. And they are going to learn skills through this. And coping, you know, but expect to see some changes and big feelings through this.
Yeah. And, you know, part of this, it's been a while since I was in this particular situation, but I think I just want our listeners to hear this, is that, you know, from the judge's standpoint, you know, and depending on what side, you know, is arguing for what, they'll be like, children are resilient. They can just do whatever. They're going to be fine. They will adapt like that. And that can be really, really hard for parents to hear. And I don't think it's true for all children. I think eventually with the right support and the right communication with your child, they will be okay. Like, they will. But, you know, I just want our listeners to know, and that's why getting therapy, just for you as the parent, how do I deal with these things? And maybe for your child, so that they're a bit more equipped.
Absolutely. I have to imagine the judges mean like a good thing when they're saying that, right? But I can be on the other side of it and hear parents being like, oh my gosh, but what if my kid is not like that?
And then the reality is, if they're not, you have to have evidence to show that, right? Because, you know, unfortunately, and I, of course, we represent women, so I definitely have a slant on it and my perception, but this is a common argument. You know, if the mom's like, no, but they're getting really scared. And then the father's just like, no, you are enabling them and it's you and it's not the child. You're creating this. And very often, unfortunately, the courts will side with the husband on that and go to the hysterical mother is the problem, when she may or may not be, right? We're not there.
No, and I think parents, just by virtue of being two different people, right, are just different in their emotional expressions. about things, mm-hmm. right? And emotional intuitiveness. Yeah. And children sometimes, just like people, go to different parents for different things. Kids know, right? Oh, this is the person I can share more of this stuff with, and this is the person I can share more of this other thing with. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily like better or worse, but, you know, my experience has been, and it sounds like yours, Heather's, is often that, you know, the parent, the moms, quote unquote, hear a lot more of this side of the like emotional mm-hmm. aspect of things. And there is some stereotyping there that the men are more likely to be like, just, you know, put your boot, you know, pick up your bootstraps and just like keep going. And that may be like a societal thing as well, right? We were just talking about the ways that we were parented. Mm-hmm. And so that is likely what they know too, in doing the best that they can, right? That may be these mm-hmm. people's coping skills as well. We just have to keep trucking.
Yeah. And I do think that, right, it's different perceptions of your children. And, you know, with many of our clients, they have been more of the majority caregiver.
Yeah.
And they're more involved. They're more in tune with the nuances with their children. And so it's easier for them to communicate that. But, and that's why for our listeners, you know, that's why getting help, therapy, understanding what's going on, not that we want to, not that I know that the doctors like Dr. Miller want to go to court ever. We need some objective proof, some objective, you know, insight into what is going on and what could help the child. Because I think both parents are coming at it through their lawyers, like, do this, do that. Yet we certainly aren't experts in children. So
there are forensic evaluations. I don't know if you've ever had to do one in the past.
We do a lot of different types of investigations, okay. exams by children. And it really does just depend often because, you know, a common thing is, again, may be stereotypical, but we represent women only. So I see it yeah. from that lens, right? But when the child is having difficulty and they don't want to see dad and they don't like dad, the court system immediately is like, it must be mom's fault, right? She must be doing this, rather than giving the child some credit for maybe they've seen this behavior and yeah. maybe they don't have a relationship. And so that's when definitely therapy is necessary, because the child needs a safe space.
Process.
And then yeah. often it turns out, no, you've just not been being a good parent, dad. And maybe you, or the way you've been treating the mom, it's not that she's saying anything. Children see things. They understand what's going on. And a lot of times, only through an expert or an evaluation can that really come to light in the court system.
That makes sense. And those are really forensic evaluations, which is actually not something that I provide or have like expertise mm-hmm. in. But it's when families do call me with this, I always try to then refer them out to a forensic psychologist.
And usually, though, there's going to need to be some kind of therapy for the child, and because the court system, and rightly so, you know, their goal is, hey, both parents should be involved. And a child is better off if they have two, you know, healthy parents who are loving and caring for them. But sometimes the children are really having a difficult time. And now, is that something that within your practice you've seen or can deal with, like really helping the child to maybe accept the new situation, and maybe they didn't have as close of a relationship as, say, with the dad?
We've definitely worked with like many kids who've, you know, been going through divorce. And I think our job really is to help listen to the child, right? To help them process and understand their feelings. And it's really not, my role when I work with these kids is that lens. I mean, it's not about swaying a kid either way. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, I'm in New York State and I'm a little bit familiar, but not super familiar. Sometimes I know the court actually appoints their own child attorneys here so that they have their own kind of advocate. But I see our job as giving the child a place to process their thoughts and feelings, right? To have like a safe space where they can talk about all the changes that are really happening. And sometimes I think this is why it's really helpful to have a good plan as much as you can going in to the divorce, right? To start therapy or be thinking about these things as soon as possible, not like later, not 6 months later, but to really be giving your child coping skills, knowing that change might be coming if that's possible, really trying to set mm-hmm. everybody up for success. My goal in saying this is because I don't want everyone to think that therapy, you know, is only for kids who are dealing with very significant behavioral or mental health challenges. Therapy sometimes can also be like proactive. I think of it that way too, as mm-hmm. like this is going to come up. How do I prepare you for what's to happen so that you can sail through this, right? Like, as helpful as possible. It's sort of like when I think about, hey, maybe a family should call you for a consultation first to know, what does divorce look like? What does it entail? Like, what are the steps? Yeah. What are the things I should be thinking about? Same thing. I have a lot of families call me before we're thinking about moving. We're thinking about divorce. Mm-hmm. We're thinking about changing our kid's school, or someone's might be sick. We have this transition coming up. What are some things that we should be thinking about to help support our kids? So therapy is not always to like pathologize somebody that something is so wrong with my child.
Right.
But sort of as a, let's like think about what are the things that we can do that'll be supportive, right?
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's so important, and particularly for parents when they're going through a divorce, or individuals, right? It just can be all consuming. It's a lot.
More hard.
And not that you aren't doing what you can for your kids, but you can get pretty, you know, exhausted emotionally just by the process, and it can be exhausting. So giving your child a space where they can talk freely and be heard to process a lot of their emotions, I think is just so helpful, because they need to process that, and they may say things that you might be defensive about because you're going through the divorce.
But also many kids come and they don't want to talk about those things. Like, you know, it's really interesting to see like how many kids come and they want to talk about the playground. They want to talk about Minecraft, you know? So it's really just to have their own kind of like space and time to talk about what's important to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, one of the things she said, like when these behaviors, they start seeing them.
Yeah.
There is something probably behind them,
definitely.
Right? It's not maybe just that they're wanting to defy you. Like, if they don't want to go to school, or they don't want to go to this other house now, right? Like, it's important to really look into see what is going on with your child.
The why, right? Really understanding why, I think, is really important. And that's a hard thing for a lot of parents to do. Both kind of what you said, we can be emotionally depleted. We don't have the time. And I'll say, like, some kids and even some teens, like, we don't always know why. You know, I don't know if it's ever happened to even, like, adults. We're like, this just doesn't feel right to me, but I can't put my finger on it. And a lot of kids don't want to hurt their parents either.
I was just going to say that. They worry. Like, let's say, you know, dad's moved on. He's got a new girlfriend, maybe even wife. Mom's by herself. And it's not necessarily that she's doing anything. They're just really empathetic. They're worried. And it's hard to come back and say, oh, I had a great time.
Oh, yeah, that happens a lot too, right? Yeah, they're worried, is my mom going to be upset if I had a good time, or vice versa? And so
vice versa, yeah.
I think really for parents to know, like, the more open that you can be, the more accepting you can be, even when things are really rough through the divorce, right? That is going to be really helpful for your child to know that, like, you're prioritizing, for them to feel like you're prioritizing their kind of like happiness and an experience, and that they can have a different relationship with their parent than what you have with them, right? They don't have to be like they don't have to worry about you. And I think that's actually a really big piece, is that you're right. Some kids really do worry about their parents. And so for parents to not use their kids as a friend or as a crutch, right? Like, I'm the parent, I'm in charge, I'm okay, meaning it's not my kid's job to take care of me. I have other people taking care of me, right? Might be like my friends, my therapist, my divorce attorney, right? I have a team of people like helping me, but that is not the job of my child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is huge.
That is so huge. And very much to, you know, make sure those boundaries are there. And, you know, for our listeners, like you said in the beginning, being very open and truthful, but here in Florida, you better not be sharing all the things that have been, you know, in writing and pleadings and a lot of it, you know, inside, you know, behind closed doors and chambers, things that are going on with your child, right? You have to use discretion, right? There can be like, this is what's going on.
No. When I
say, we're not talking about these specific details.
Yeah. When I say, like, you know, be truthful, I think it would be probably truthful to say, you know, we were married. We are no longer going to be together anymore. We are two parents who we still love you. We want to take care of you. This is what your living situation is going to look like. This is the way we are going to handle maybe birthday parties or graduations or things like that as best as we can. You know, these are some things that are going to change, though. These are some things that are going to stay the same. But of course, not all those, you know, details. But I think it can be so hard sometimes, you know, when
I think it's hard, especially when they're older and adolescents.
And they're thinking, right? The kids are
thinking sometimes. They want to know.
They want to know. And that's where I think it's important for parents to have their boundaries. Remember that, like, they say they want to know, but do they, you know, but what I am the parent here, and it's my job to still think about my kid in like a certain way. And then I have this experience and knowledge that they don't have.
And at the end of the day, even if, right, like, you know, their dad has done terrible things, I think that you need to have boundaries and use discretion, because that's their father.
Yes.
And you can't, you know, what do we say? You can't put that back in the can or whatever, right? You can't, can't take that back. You can't not hear that. And you're potentially doing more damage to them and maybe your relationship with them, because you've shared too much.
Yeah.
And later on, they're like, why did they tell me all that? You know, and it's just so confusing.
It's really hard. Much.
Yeah. 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 But absolutely. Anyway, that happens sometimes. And I wanted to, like, you know, I wanted to get you to, you know, your opinion on that, because I think that, again, that's, you know, there are a lot of things that are difficult and
definitely
when people are going through this.
And when you're talking about teens as well, it's like the teens are, you know, the role of a parent changes sometimes. Right. And I think so parents are trying to navigate that. And then I have this other change, and how do I figure out where those boundaries are, but really trying to remember where the boundaries are, I think at the forefront.
Absolutely.
It's really important. Totally.
Yes. Well, Dr. Miller, I can't believe that our time has gone so quickly. This has been a great discussion.
Thank you.
But before we go, can you impart on our listeners what you've learned about women and their resilience throughout your career and experience?
Women are just the most resilient kind of group of people that I have really ever worked with. I find that they are just so insightful, thoughtful, caring, always trying to like level up and learn more. And so I feel like what I know is that women are fighters and strong and will get through to the other end. Mm-hmm. They're great community organizers often also, and really good at amassing really positive teams around them to help them succeed. And so, you know, I have full like faith in the women listening to this that, you know, if you have kids who are struggling, or you're going through this, you will figure out a way to get to the other side and to kind of trust your instinct, seek support. It's there for you.
So lastly, Dr. Miller, where can our listeners find you for more information and resources?
I'm at connectedmindsnyc.com.
Well, wonderful. Well, we've reached the end of our show. Thank you so much to Dr. Erica Miller for joining us to discuss how divorce impacts children emotionally and behaviorally, what evidence-based support and treatment options look like, and where to seek professional help for learning or mental health concerns. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Absolutely. Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not an advertisement for legal services. The information provided on this podcast is not intended to be legal advice. If you have a legal issue, please contact an attorney in your local jurisdiction. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are solely those of the individuals and do not represent the views or opinions of the firms or organizations with which they are affiliated. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Any editing, reproduction, or redistribution of this podcast for commercial use or monetary gain without the expressed written consent of the podcast's creator is prohibited.